We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, I'm chatting with TSBC alum Kim Burks of Ramona and Ruth. Ramona and Ruth is a boutique letterpress studio located in Omaha, Nebraska. Kim started Ramona and Ruth in 2009 with her tabletop letterpress in a spare bedroom of her home. Kim makes simple and thoughtful letterpress greeting cards and a variety of other paper goods, including gift wrap, notebooks, and planners. Ramona and Ruth products can be found in retail shops big and small across the United States. On today's episode, we're talking about Kim's decision to change her business name, how her design aesthetic has evolved over time, and how bringing on sales reps has enhanced her business. Hey, Kim, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hi, Katie. Thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I can't wait to talk to you today. So let's start by talking about your journey in business. Did you always know that you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
No, actually, I thought I wanted to be an accountant.
No way!
That changed really quickly with an internship at an accounting firm. It's like, I can't be doing this my whole life. So yeah, it's total change. Yeah.
So did you just enjoy numbers? Is that why you wanted to go into accounting?
Yeah, I do. I'm a math nerd. I really like the numbers. Yeah.
Do you still geek out? That's an important skill to have though in a product-based business.
Oh,
do you geek
I mean, out that's on... what's kind of cool is that it, you know, it's a creative business, but you still have to have the numbers down. So yeah, it's kind of fun to be able to do both.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Well, and it's important. A lot of people lack that number, the interest in the numbers, I should say. I mean, sure, they know they need to crunch them. But so you wanted to be an accountant. Yes. How did you make that switch to being a designer?
Well, after that internship, I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I still did something. I majored in marketing.
Okay.
And then towards the end of my schooling in college, I was like, okay, what am I going to do with this marketing degree? And then I ended up taking a graphic design class. And I was like, okay, I think that these two things could kind of mesh well. So I took more graphic design classes, and then after college ended up getting a position as a graphic designer in the corporate world.
Oh, nice. How long did you do that before you jumped out on your own?
Let's see. So I did that for a couple of years. It just, I learned a lot at that job, but it just wasn't very, the projects weren't very creative. It was a lot of survey layout and that kind of thing. So I don't know, I was ready for a change.
Yeah.
So after that, I started to do freelancing. And so I was doing things like logo design and print design, and then also wedding invitations, which is what led me to letterpress, really.
Very cool. Yeah. And how did you learn to do letterpress? Did you take class or do an internship?
I searched all around the country for a little tabletop press because I knew I wanted to try it out first, make sure I liked it before getting a big honker machine and then be like, oh, yeah, this isn't for me. So I ended up actually teaching myself. I researched so much, so many hours online and got into those little letterpress forums and everything and asked questions there. And yeah, it was a long process, a lot of trial and error, a lot of frustration doing it that way. But I ended up getting the hang of it. And yeah, basically.
So when did it turn from more of just like a hobby, you wanted to learn the skill, to, okay, this is going to be a business?
So going back to the wedding invitations, I was doing a lot of those as I was freelancing. And I like the idea of being able to do the design and then also kind of control the whole process, even the print side. So when I ordered my plates, I had put my own little designs on there too. And I thought, boy, this is kind of cool. I like being able to do this whole thing in-house. That's when it really started turning into business. I opened up a shop, an Etsy shop, in 2009 and listed some things on there. And it was mostly, back then I did a lot of just like flat stationery that I was printing. And yeah, it just kind of grew from there.
That's funny. I started with wedding invitations and flat stationery that was personalized too. I wasn't doing letterpress, but I was and those were the things I liked or that I was working on in my own personal life too. So it was, you know, what inspired me along at the time, but very cool. Well, your company, Ramona and Ruth, was previously called Paper Lovely. Right. What was the catalyst for changing your business name? And was this a difficult decision for you?
It was really difficult. I was 7 years into this name. And I remember about year five, I was like, gosh, I mean, to be blunt, I didn't really like it anymore. Like it didn't fit with the direction I wanted to go. And it didn't have any meaning for one. It was something I just kind of came up with. It's like, oh, that sounds nice. Let's go with this. And so it was hard to create a real brand story from it. Mm-hmm. So I knew I wanted to change it, but I thought, well, it's too late for that. I mean, we are deep into this, you know? But yeah, and then it came up again a few years later. Like I just pushed it down. Just like, I can't do it. So a couple years later, I was talking to my husband about it, and he's like, why don't you just do it already? You have been talking about it for a couple of years. You could have been this much further along. Just do it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was just like somebody saying, it's going to be okay.
Right. Somebody giving you the permission that it's okay to do this.
Yes.
But I can understand your fear. You had already established Paper Lovely as a brand. You had been, you know, featured in press. Right. You had a following already. And so to make that switch, I'm sure one of your concerns was, will people follow me? Will they know that this is still me? And to your point about a brand story, I think that is a really powerful way to look at this process, because you do want your brand to be telling a story and you do want people to understand what you're trying to do throughout your brand. Mm-hmm. So how did you land on Ramona and Ruth? What's the story behind that name?
So Ramona and Ruth, those are the names of my grandmothers. And Ramona, she had her own flower shop. She was an entrepreneur herself. My grandma Ruth was the wife of a farmer. So she, you know, was hardworking, taking care of the farm. And they just really inspired me. And I wanted to honor them. And I thought, and plus, it kind of was nice that their names both started with R. It just sounded nice and at the same time had meaning. So that's why I knew I wanted to change it to that.
Nice. What was the process for changing the name? Like logistically, did you have a plan for how you wanted to roll this out or?
Well, I knew that the number one thing was going to have to be communicating crystal clear with my current retailers. Because I didn't want any confusion. I didn't want them to think, well, okay, what is she doing? Is she going to be doing this every five years, changing her name? So that was my main goal, was to clearly communicate to them. Mm-hmm. So I started out with doing a direct mailer. And then after that, did an email blast to all my current retailers. And then the timing, I think, was pretty decent because I announced it. It was April of 2016. And I knew I was going to be doing the stationery show in May. So just getting to meet, to see the retailers at the stationery show and connect with them face to face. And if they had any questions for me, be able to answer them in person, I think was really valuable. And I mean, it was received pretty well, I thought. You know, a lot of the retailers would be like, oh, it's after your grandmother's. Let's see, what would my business name be if I, and it was just like already building this connection. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a super scary thing to do. And probably pretty risky, but I'm glad that I did it. I feel so comfortable with my new name. I'm proud of it. I wasn't really proud of it before. And I think it just really reflects my brand now.
I think it also reflects your brand style. I've seen a shift in your work too. Mm-hmm. You know, I love your design style. I think it's very clean, but at the same time, geometric and fun. Like,
thank you.
What inspires? Of course, what inspires you when you're creating this work, and how has that changed over the years?
Well, I'm inspired a lot. I'm noticing when I travel and I'm just exposed to different settings. I get out of my own little bubble and just pick up on different things that I'm not gonna, you know, get just like being in my own staying in Omaha all the time, you know, just exposing myself to different things.
Yeah.
And I think my style, it's still minimal. I think it's always been more simplistic and minimal, but within mm-hmm. that, it's changed. Like I used to do a lot more illustrations, like more realistic designs. And now I've been exploring a lot, like you said, with the geometrics and the patterns. And I think it's just maybe a change within myself too, because I notice even the way that I am decorating my house has kind of changed, or like the clothes that I wear. I think, I don't know, I must be evolving as a person. I don't know.
Of course you are. But I love that you brought this round to your surroundings, your clothing, because it's true. I almost feel like changing the company name for you was like putting on a new outfit a little bit. And it was like, or like a comfortable pair of shoes that you hadn't worn in a while. Exactly. And now it's kind of helped you settle into, this is who I am and this is what I like for my business, for right. my life, for all
well,
of it.
And I feel like too, going off that, it kind of freed me of what I thought I had to be doing and the designs I thought I had to be doing. It was almost like a fresh start.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, not totally fresh. But yeah, I think it all worked out, thank goodness.
Of course it did. That's so funny. So your work is letterpress printed. We talked about that. Do you do all of your own printing or do you outsource any of it?
I do a majority of it. For some of the cards that are moving quickly, I'll outsource to another printer. And then I also outsource all the foil stamping. I tinkered with doing that in-house, but then I thought, oh my gosh, that's a whole nother art basically I have to learn. And I think I'll just leave it to the people that know what they're doing.
Which is smart. I mean, you hear me talk about this a lot because you've come to several of our programs of like knowing what your strengths are and playing to yeah. those strengths and then outsourcing as much as you can that isn't in your wheelhouse or
yeah.
as, you know, as strong of a, what am I trying to say? It's not, you're not as strong in those mm-hmm. areas. So yeah. it's best to outsource that.
Yeah. I think my younger self would have like, okay, let's learn this. But I don't think I can add one other thing to my plate.
Speaking of, you know, how do you juggle or how do you find the time really to juggle both printing and designing fresh new ideas and all the other aspects that go into running a business?
Well, you know, it took me a while to figure out that I needed help. And so the first, I'm so cheap that I don't want to pay anybody to help me. I think I can just do it all on my own. But it has been amazing asking for help. I hired two packagers. And so they're helping me. They basically are doing all the wholesale order fulfillment, which has been amazing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because before I was doing all that myself, and that takes up all of your time. I mean, it is such yeah. a time suck to package up those orders. And I would be yeah. kind of frustrated as I was doing it because I knew, like, I should not be doing this. I need to hire people that can help me so I can focus on things that I am good at and that I enjoy. Yeah. So like the design work, you know, that's my number one. That's what I love doing. And yeah. then I do love the marketing part of it, like just the newsletters and figuring out strategies. And so, yeah, it just, those are the two main things that I try to focus on now, along with printing, I guess.
Right, of course. But it's smart because you need to be focused on the higher level revenue generating things that are going to help sustain your business. Packaging your cards, that's a necessity that has to be done to get everything out the door so that you can then collect money on it. But ultimately, it's the designing or the marketing strategy or all these things that you're still keeping on your plate that are driving the sales. So I think that's smart. Although it is hard to manage all of the different things. So I'm glad to hear you're asking for help more and bringing on some help too.
Yes.
So you sell direct to consumer, but you also sell wholesale. When you started selling wholesale, was that an intentional decision or did you find that you were just kind of hearing from shops that wanted your stuff and figuring out things as you went at the beginning?
Yeah, at the beginning, I didn't really have a clear path. I was just kind of like trying out this, trying out that. So like I said, I originally had an Etsy shop. So I just I guess I was just focused on the end consumer at that point. And then I remember getting, you know, a few combos in Etsy for retailers wanting to sell my products in their shop. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. So yeah, it wasn't something I initially pursued. I don't even think I really knew it was a thing. Like, I was pretty naive.
You're not alone. I think when I first was approached about wholesale, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to price things. I mean, it's a common story of everyone in our alumni community of like, we didn't know what we didn't know. So you're not alone there. But how soon after did you decide that wholesale should be a larger part of your business? And I guess this additional question of that is, how soon after starting to really sell wholesale in like true meaningful way did you start exhibiting at shows too?
I would say I dabbled in wholesale for about a year. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing this stationery show business, like, what is this? This looks awesome. I want to go. On Oh So Beautiful paper, I would see. And I was like, I need to do that. That looks really cool. So it was about a year later. So 2011 is when I decided to go to the stationery show. But I did it with a group called the Ladies of Letterpress. And thank goodness, because I had no idea what I was doing. I remember, you know, so we would all have our little tasks, like someone was in charge of the floor and in charge of the walls. I didn't even know you had to set up walls. I didn't know anything. And I remember walking into the Javits Center for the first time and I was like, oh, wow. Like, we aren't kidding around here. This is like, okay. You know, and at the time, I just had one little tiny section of the booth to set up, thank goodness. So I just had to worry about that. But yeah, I didn't know what I was doing.
But now, I mean, for the last couple of years, you've had your own booth. When did you do your own booth then?
Okay, so 2012 and 13, I shared with one other letterpress printer. And then the rest of the years, I did on my own.
Nice.
So baby steps.
But that's good. I like the idea. And we talk about this at Paper Camp too, of like a shared option in a booth is a great way to get your feet wet and to like figure out what you need and how it all works, and moving up to having your own booth. That's smart. I think the way you did it was really smart. What were some factors that you considered before doing your first show? I know that one was in, you know, a shared booth, but shows can be scary. It can feel really overwhelming. I know people are fearful of the cost. They're worried about, is this going to be a wise investment? What were some of the things that were going through your head?
Yeah, definitely the cost. That was another reason that I wanted to do a shared booth, is because, you know, we all split the cost. So it wasn't such a hard hit for booth space.
Yeah.
Let's see. What were the other factors I considered? Let's see.
Yeah. Like, what were some of the fears or even excitements, framing it in a positive way of like, what were you excited about? Exposure to new clients and new accounts.
I felt like I had, at the time, I felt like I had a decent enough card line that I, you know, had a developed style enough. I was excited to get in front of buyers and press, and I really wanted to grow. I knew I really wanted to grow my business, and I thought that this would be a great step in doing so.
Yeah. It sounds like it has, considering you've been going back year over year, just in different formats.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a great show for me. I know some people, you know, I know it's getting smaller, but I kind of like it that way. I don't know. It feels, I don't know. It's intimate, but I really enjoy it. I really look forward to it. It's fun to connect with everybody. It's kind of like a little reunion. And even with, you know, both the retail side and, or the retailer side and
colleagues.
I really look forward to it.
Yeah, I agree with you. So you've recently brought on sales reps for the wholesale side of your business. Did they find you or did you reach out to them?
It was a mix. Last year, especially, I made it a point to do some outreach because I knew I wanted to grow my business, and I thought that reps would be a really great and efficient way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because you can send out mailers and emails till you're blue in the face, but there's something about a person, a rep, going to that store physically. They probably have a good relationship with that store already. So it's just like one step ahead of, I don't know, that just that connection that they have that you don't yet.
Well, you're right. The human connection is so strong. But then also, they know your line pretty well. They know what are your best sellers. Mm-hmm. They know what's new, because that's always what buyers ask, right?
Yeah.
What's new? And so they can point, they know, they can anticipate what questions that buyer is going to have and point them directly to what's new and, you know, what are the best sellers. So I agree with you. I think having sales reps can be really powerful. That being said, onboarding sales reps can also feel like a lot of work. And I think it's something that people underestimate sometimes, because you do need to provide these reps with things like product samples and catalogs and all of that. What do you do, or how do you nurture your sales reps, and what tools do you provide them with so that they're doing the best job possible for you?
I try to give them, you know, obviously everything they ask for and in a timely manner. I think having really open communication with them. I was talking with one of them the other day about regarding pricing, and that it's so valuable to have their input when they're on the front lines. Like they're, you know, in the stores themselves. They hear the feedback from the retailers, and mm-hmm. just having that is invaluable to me.
The other thing is they see what other lines are doing too, because they're in the shops all the time. Whereas I feel like some of us are in our studio all the time with our head mm-hmm. down doing our work, and we're not always necessarily looking around at where things are shifting in the industry. And I feel like reps have a really good finger on the pulse yes. of what's happening, because they're out in the shops, like you said, and talking to the owners about your work as well as just what's happening industry-wide.
Right. Yeah.
How has working with sales reps enhanced your business?
It's been really good. It's definitely, you know, volume is up, which is awesome. It's made me get extra organized. Like I thought I was pretty organized before and had systems in place, but it's made me hone down on systems even more and creating just how can we get an order out the door the quickest? Like we mm-hmm. reorganized the studio the other day, just making things flow better. And yeah, it's been awesome.
What about release schedules? Has it shifted the way you're releasing new products or the timing in which you're releasing new products?
I'm starting to do things a little earlier now. Even like with holiday, I was doing it in July, but this year it'll be out in May, and it's made me better focus on the release schedules.
Yeah. The release schedules are an interesting thing, because as we tell all of you guys at Paper Camp, we tell you to be ready really early so that your sales reps, even if you're not working with sales reps, everything will be ready for that early round of buyers right. on the wholesale side. But it's hard to think about, gosh, I'm getting holiday ready in May.
Yeah.
Like this just seems wild. But by having it ready in May, you can capture those first round of buyers that are ready to do it. They're buying in May. And then, you know, later on, you're still ready for anyone
right.
needing it later.
Yeah, which is what I wasn't really grasping before, because I was like, well, people are buying in July. That's and I even have comments at NSS that like, oh, I can't even look at holiday yet. And so I kind of thought I was doing the right thing, but I didn't realize that, yeah, there are two different waves of people. And mm-hmm. You know, the bigger box stores are earlier, and then the more boutique stores can be later, not always.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of a new concept for me.
Well, and it kind of depends on the shop itself, like the storage that they have. You know,
right.
shops with lots more storage, they'll order early because they have a place to put it. But smaller shops that don't have as much storage space or shelf space, they might want it later just so they can kind of pull it from the boxes and put it straight on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely different. So, you've been in business a while now. You've learned a lot as you've built this business, you know, taking it from freelance work to, okay, I'm going to do this as a real business. I'm going to add wholesale in the mix. I'm going to change my name. I'm going to add reps. You've had a lot of like fluctuation in a positive way, because I do think that all these changes make us stronger and where we are today. But looking back, if you had to give one piece of advice to somebody that's just starting out in their product journey and creating a product-based business, what would you tell them? What would you want them to know?
I would say the most important thing is to really hone in on your voice and your aesthetic, because I mean, honestly, there's so many of us. There's so many car companies, and what's going to make you stand out from the rest? And I think sometimes it's easy to see, you know, some sort of style doing well and say, oh, maybe I should do that because, you know, that's selling. But I think when it comes down to it, you have to be true to your own voice and really focus on developing that. And that'll set you apart.
I love that. I'm over here nodding ferociously. Yes, because I wholeheartedly agree with you. I'm constantly asking clients that I'm working with on a coaching basis, I love your concept, but how are you going to differentiate yourself? How are you going to make yourself stand out from the crowd? Because there's other people offering, whether it's cards or whether it's totally other products like, you know, candles or jewelry, right, or whatever. What is going to make you shine and what's going to make you stand out? Mm-hmm. So thank you. I think that's a really important concept. What's next for you and Ramona and Ruth? What do you have coming up?
Well, got another NSS coming up. So I'm just trying to, I have all the cards designed and everything. So that's kind of a nice weight off my shoulders, but just, you know, getting the catalog and everything ready. So yeah, that's been my big focus.
Nice.
And then eventually I'm thinking about, I want to move my space out of my house. Mm-hmm. But I'm just waiting for the right time and the right place. I'm not in a big hurry, but I think my husband's getting a little anxious for me for the boxes to stop.
I can relate. We were when I started Kelp Designs, we were living in a 2-bedroom, 1-bath apartment, and we had a baby at home and another on the way. And my husband was like, you realize that you can't have these boxes of cards, like boxes and boxes and boxes of cards in what's supposed to be the nursery. And I'm like, I know that. But to my point, she doesn't really sleep in the nursery. She sleeps in with us. So it's kind of, but anyhow, I'm digressing here. It was, yeah. I understand what it's like to have our businesses really infiltrate our lives. Yes. So I hope you do find something that you like. And when the timing is right, that you are able to expand into a studio space of your own. So
me too.
So where can people find you online?
I'm mostly on Instagram at Ramona and Ruth, a little bit on Facebook. Ramona and Ruth all around.
What about your URL if they want to check out your products and buy your stuff?
Just ramonaandruth.com.
Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Well, we will put that in the show notes too so people can find you. And Kim, thank you so much for joining me today. This was a lot of fun and it was fun to hear your story. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Katie.
If you'd like to receive more information about our upcoming episodes of Proof to Product, including show notes and information about our guests, head over to prooftoproduct.com and sign up for our email list. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.